So once again, I'm glad to be here with you all. Today, I prefer to talk something about very useful practice which may benefit to many beginners. Even though it is very simple, but it is very useful. In many teachings or in many practices, this seven branch prayer is very important everywhere. Seven branch prayers. So I thought that it is necessary to explain what are the seven branch prayers. Even though it is simple, it may be very useful to many people. So I thought it is necessary to shed some explanations on that. Whenever we perform any kind of prayers or any kind of practices, before that we first pray to Buddha, take refuge, and then Bodhicitta, and after that some sort purification or offering, something like that. But then these were summed up into seven branch prayers. Now, what are the seven branch prayers? First one is prostration. Second, offerings. Third, confession or regretfulness. Fourth, rejoicing. Fifth, requesting to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to turn the wheel of Dharma. Sixth, requesting to all those Buddha's incarnation, or to all those root gurus, to all those teachers, to remain in this samsara for the benefit of all living things. That is the sixth one. And lastly, the dedication, which is very important. So within these seven branch prayers, everything is included. One can also practice these seven branches of prayer and try to turn your mind towards Dharma, practice yourself, try to recognize one's own nature of mind, and then whatever they accumulated, you dedicate it for the benefit of living beings. So here, everything from top to bottom, everything is included. If you go on practicing on these seven branch prayers, it is helpful. Even though it is simple, whatever you do, any kind of prayers, any kind of performing, any kind of rites, these seven branch prayers are always there. So before doing that, now here, I would like to say that it is necessary to visualize the refuge tree. Now, refuge tree, it differs in different teachings, but normally speaking, you think that in front of you, there grows you, where you are. That is the center of this world, or center of this universe, or center of the pure land. So from there it grows a big Padma flower, and it is so big that it fills almost whole sky. You just think that. On that there is a moon, sun disk or moon disk. In many teachings it advises that way, but upon the flower, then you think that your root guru, that means Guru Padma Sambhava, Guru Rinpoche, reside on that flower. And you, Guru Rinpoche, is the root, inseparable of your root guru. Or simply you can think Guru Rinpoche is pure body, speech and mind, already there, sitting on the flower. And above him, if you are able, then you can think the lineage of the root guru's lineage. That means from Guru Rinpoche, it goes up to the Samantabhadra Buddha. That means the first Buddha. From there, the teaching starts. From Samantabhadra, it comes to Vajrasattva. From Vajrasattva, Garab Dorje, and from Garab Dorje, then comes related with the human beings, and then the lineage of the root guru spreads from there until to your root guru. And you have to think that in front of your root guru, that means Guru Rinpoche is sitting here, in front of that, the flower, for example, this is the meadow where Guru Rinpoche used to reside. And if Guru Rinpoche is facing this way towards me, then in front of Guru Rinpoche, there you have to think that, again, there is a flower. On that flower, you think the Buddhas of past, present, future used to stay there. And on the right side of Guru Rinpoche, your root guru, you have to think that there are like Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, Manjushri, Sai Nyingpo, Namgye Nyingpo. That means including these Bodhisattvas, all the Bodhisattvas are residing on the right side of your root guru. And on the left side of your root guru, left side of Guru Rinpoche, again on the Padma flower, you have to think that there reside the arahats, like Mangalaputra, Shariputra, Anand, Kashyapa, and all those arahats of the, they are also the great teachers, masters of the Hinayanas. They are already away from this sansara. So all those arahats, they are residing on the left side of Guru Rinpoche. And now on the back side of Guru Rinpoche, again on the Padma flower, you can think that way. And from there, there gets all the teachings of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, teachings of Guru Rinpoche, everything in the form of book, in a form of religious book, scriptures. You think that everything is there in red color. You think that all the scriptures are in red color. And from those scriptures, you visualize that it gives the spontaneously the sound of the vowels, that means sound of the wisdom mind, speech of Buddha coming from there, something like that. which is related with the wisdom speech and wisdom mind of Buddha. Everything comes from there. So that is, you have to visualize that way. And then the places, some the vacant places are there. Now there you have to think that all the meditational deities, restful deities, and the peaceful deities, female, male, it doesn't matter. All the restful deities and peaceful deities are also residing and surrounding your root guru, Guru Rinpoche. Everyone, every meditational deities, they are also there. Now, in different teachings, maybe some sort, the deities may be differed from there. But here what I mean to say is, you can think, visualize that way. All the deities, restful or peaceful, everyone is surrounding Guru Rinpoche. And below, in the last line of the refuge tree, that means Padma flower, you have to think that all the Dharmapalas, Dharmapala means the protector of the Dharmas, the protector of the practitioners. Those who are practicing Buddha Dharma, they will be protected by these Dharmapalas. And the religion, the secret teachings of Guru Rinpoche will be protected by these Dharmapalas. Because they are in a form of Dharmapala, but they are in essence, they are Buddhas. They used to come in a form of Dharmapala in this sansara to protect the Dharmas and to protect those who are practicing. So, you think that everything, every Dharmapalas are also there. Because when we do any kind of prayers, pujas, then normally we used to offer to them. And we are seeking the blessings from them. So that is why it is necessary. This kind of refuge tree should be there and visualize yourself. And in front of that refuge tree, you are sitting, facing towards the refuge tree. And you are not alone there. Your father, all the male side, male, they used to sit in the right side of your hand. And all the mother's side, that means mother and female groups, they used to sit in the left side of your hand. And then all the living beings, whatever they are, they may be, whatever the form they may have, it doesn't matter, but you have to think that whole living beings are surrounding with you, sitting on the back side, father's side on the right, mother's side on the left. And most importantly, when you are doing any kind of practice, when you are doing any kind of good, positive things, you must honor, respect to your enemy. So that is why if you have any kind of enemy, then those enemies you have to visualize in front of you. Because they are more important in practices, during practice. So that is why you have to visualize that those enemies whom you don't like, they are always disturbing you. But during the practice, they are the most important. So you must offer the best seat to them in front of you. After doing that, after visualizing all these, then we will go through the practice of seven branch prayers now. And that is the visualization. You have to think that way. And now, your root guru, who is surrounded by all the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, Didis, Dharmapalas, everything, every great teachers, masters are in front of you there now. And those are inseparable of your root guru. That means they are so powerful. All the extraordinary beings whom you visualize in the refuge tree, they are extraordinary. They are fully awakened already, Buddha. Unobscured. Now, don't think that there's a small Padma flower or your refuge tree, very small, not like that. It's so vast, very big, like almost it filled whole sky. You think that way. Your mind, your creation from your mind should be really very huge, big. Then it is more useful to you. And you are sitting in front of that. And now from the very beginning, you have to pray or invoke with deep devotion to them and start prostrating. Now, first one is prostration. That's a practice now. You can accumulate a great lot of merit through practicing these seven branch prayers. First one, prostration. During the time of prostration, don't think that you alone is prostrating. Whole living beings are with you. And when you prostrate, you think that whole living being is with you prostrating to this refuge tree. The object of the refuge, Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, that means in front of you. Everything is included there. So to them you are prostrating. That means you are surrendering before them, saying that from today onwards, I will never let grow the ego, arrogance, or prostration. Last time also I explained that prostration means you are becoming humble, you are becoming simple, you wanted to surrender before Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. You don't want to be in the samsara. From since beginningless time you are in the samsara wandering because of egoism, because of arrogant, because of pride. Because of this, you are unable to surrender your body, mind and speech to anybody else. Because you think that you are the most important. You think that you are the most knowledgeable. You don't want to bow down before anybody else. Even though you think that way, but in nature, it is a habit of all living beings. What we are doing when we saw something, then normally, even though it is not necessary to bow down before them, even though it is not necessary, but you bow down before them. Bow down means it doesn't mean bowing down your head, but you surrendered your idea, way of thinking. For example, some small countries, because of fear, they surrendered before big countries. That's not necessary, actually. According to the teachings, Buddha's teachings, if you surrender, it doesn't benefit to you. It doesn't mean that way that, oh, big country is going to eat a small country, then small country should surrender themselves before the big country. Maybe it may give us a little bit benefit at the time, but that is not a lasting benefit. We normally do that way. The husband and wife, you just imagine, sometimes husband very, even though it is not necessary to surrender before their wife or before the husband, even though it is not necessary, but because of pride, because of, say, anger, because of arrogant, they maybe do practice that way, but that is not a long-lasting then you won't get any kind of long or lasting benefit. So now it is necessary, the most important is, if you surrender your ego, your pride, and your arrogance before Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. That means saying that because of doing this pride, ego, arrogance, till now, I am in this samsara. I didn't get any chance to get rid of from this samsara. Now, I wanted to go away from this samsara. If you really wanted to go away from this samsara, then you must surrender before Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Now, it doesn't mean that if you surrender Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, you will get, you become small, you will suffer. It doesn't mean that way. But Buddha, Dharma, and Sanghas are always compassionate. They are always useful. They never deceive anybody else. If you offer your body, speech, and mind with deep devotion and faith by doing the prostrations before them, then it will help you to root out egoism, root out ego, arrogance, and pride. Then slowly, if you minimize your ego attachment to yourself, or if you are able to minimize being arrogant, being pride, if you minimize it, then normally your mind, body, speech are now are eligible to practice. That means your mind, body, speech become the right container in which Buddha Dharma's, Buddha's teachings may pour into it. It's a right container now. So that is why it's necessary if we can do the prostrations before them. And your prostration, don't think in a simple way, but think very vast, that whole living beings are prostrating before, doing the prostrations before the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And according to certain teachings, when we do the prostrations, the place you cover with your whole body, if you count the dust, small dust, if you count the atom of those which you covered by your body, it is countless. You can't count the atoms, the dust under you. So you think that as much as those dust, you are prostrating like that. That means countless prostrations were done. In one prostration, if your mind is clever, wise, then you can prostrate countless at a time. So that is necessary. Prostration is very important. Now, in certain higher teachings, they say that after prostrating, after doing the prostrations, it can also purify your veins, nerves, channels. It can purify all those defilements, obscurations. And if the channel and if the veins, if the channels are cleared, then the wind flows in the channel. The wind the flowing of the wind inside the channel are also clean. If the flowing of the wind is clean, then Buddha nature will come up very quickly. So that is also necessary. That is also useful. If you can do the prostrations, it can clean many defilements, many obscurations within your body. It can also awake the Buddha nature. So prostration has a deep meaning now. It can destroy some defilement. So I suggest do as much as you can. Do prostration as much as you can. That is useful. In a small way of thinking, say, if we are far-sighted, it will benefit to become Buddha. If not, if you want a present result, it can also bring you good health. Through doing the prostrations, it can bring you good health. It's a kind of exercise. So why not do the prostrations? Okay. Then second, the offerings now. Now offerings, you can offer even if you are in this samsara. You can offer many, many things, many, many positive things which are in this samsara. Even though it is a defiled land, that means samsara. But there are many positive things like flowers, like beautiful water falling, right? Like beautiful sceneries, like those trees which are fully loaded with the fruit, like those beautiful lakes where many beautiful birds and the crane used to come down and play in the water. Those beautiful things, you just bring. And then offer them to these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Now, to your root guru, who is surrounded by all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, according to the visualization, to them you just offered everything, the beautiful things. If you offer that way, it's really very beneficial. Now, offering doesn't mean that you have to offer all these things with materially. For example, if I have this flower, then I can take this flower and I can offer it to my root guru. If you don't have money to buy the flower, don't worry. You can create in your mind the all positive things in this world. Beautiful mountains, snow-peaked mountains, beautiful cloud in the sky, and the sun and moon. You just think, in the night there are many stars, and in the middle there is a shining moon which gives a very cool wind. Very beautiful scenery. Why not? Took them in your mind and offer it to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Through that you can offer. Even if you are poor, you are not poor actually. If you are wise enough, if you are clever enough to think, then you can offer many things, many things. The foolish man or the foolish people, they normally think that, oh, I don't have anything to offer. If you are poor, you think that I don't have anything to offer. No, don't think that way. Don't worry. Whole universe is yours. Why not? You can offer them to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Through that, you can practice now, offering. So that is why in daily practice, last time I told you the 7 bowls of offering water. Those are also very important. Now in that, everything is included. That is why we symbolize them. It's a symbolic offering everything to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And you bring everything in 7 bowls of water and you offer them to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And that way also you can offer. Even if you are not able to do that way, you just visualize in your mind that you are offering. You bring one stick of incense. And that incense, if you are clever, you can think that this is boundless incense, immeasurable, countless, billions and billions of sticks of incense. Even though there is only one, you can think that way. Why not create in your mind? Almost, even if you have one incense, you just create it, it is filled with whole sky, and then offer it to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas.